we get things rolling by getting on board the G&M Family Market phone line and welcoming in friend of the show, Colin Fleming. Colin, good afternoon.
Greetings, Mr. Kimball. You're back. Restored to the host chair.
I am indeed. Puppy is on the road to recovery, and we're raring to go. And a really fascinating topic today, and a terrific piece that you wrote. It's up right now on Salon.com about the danger of, the hackneyed phrase is politically correct, so I'll try and avoid that, but modern-day sensibilities possibly putting great works of art in danger.
Yes, I think it's modern-day individual insides, actually, more so than any political correct notions. I think a lot of times now, people spend a lot of their time, a lot of their energy, and a lot of the basis of what becomes their sense of self from finding things to be offended by. And that often means pointing outward. You see a lot of these people like on social media, and to me it's almost like there's a quota. If you point outward enough times and say, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, by dint you say, I'm not wrong, I'm pretty good, I'm pretty moral. And I think that's one of the things that endangers art right now, and art in some ways protected the art of the past, which is where a lot of the art is. I don't think a lot is made now, because people tend to be ignorant of it. They don't know where to seek it out. They don't even know that you can just search on YouTube and find a lot of it. And I think that's a really sad state of affairs for our culture as a whole.
The impetus for this came in the late summertime, and I saw this mentioned as well, when a Memphis theater canceled a showing of Gone with the Wind.
I'm not a huge Gone with the Wind fan. I've just never found the book or the film that entertaining. But it makes you wonder what would be imperiled if more people knew about it. You almost get the sense that no one reads a biography anymore. If you read a biography and you were on the lookout for things to be offended by, see you Led Zeppelin, see you F. Scott Fitzgerald, see you Orson Welles, can't go to the museum, Picasso. We did some not like terribly great things in terms of kindness, and it's almost like you're protected via ignorance. And I think there's a huge difference between a writer in their time, an artist, espousing something that's wrong, or just kind of going along with what were the social mores of the time. We tend to have this retroactive heroism now, where we say, you know what, if I was back in time 50, 60 years ago, I would have stood up and I wouldn't have been for this. But then again, you're only using terms like heteronormative and intersectional that you didn't know 18 months ago. You're saying them because they're parroted, so you would have done exactly what people did back then. And that's what got me thinking about Buster Keaton. Because I love Buster Keaton's films. Someone like Orson Welles said that The General might be the best film of all time. I don't know if it's that, but it's, I don't know, top five for me. And it's about someone who's in the Confederate Army. And I almost wonder now, if people were aware of this film, would they say, we have to suppress it? Because he's espousing, well, I want to have slaves. But that has nothing to do with the film or with Buster Keaton or his sensibilities as an artist whatsoever.
And you write in the piece about Buster Keaton's film College, which I confess I have not seen, but you think is one of the best movies you've ever seen about what it's like to head off to start at a university.
I think it's probably the best college film I know, which puts a degree of irony on it, because I don't believe that I'd have a hard time going to college right now. I would be terrified. I would be someone who still thought what he thought, but I would feel on the defensive all the time. I think it's kind of a killing zone for free thought often. And Keaton's character goes to college. He is trying to woo a young woman. And if you've seen Buster Keaton's like classic silent films, I don't know that there's a more likable, winsome character in all of cinema, all of art. It's a guy you'd want to hang out with, someone who could inspire you to be a better person, someone who's fun, someone who never quits at all, who is always trying to see things through to the end to bring about a more rich experience, a more rich life for himself. And in the course of trying to woo this young woman in college, he takes on a series of gigs, and one of those gigs involves him dressing in blackface. Now, we all know this is wrong. You're not going out for Halloween this year dressed in blackface. But this is 1927, and people just thought differently. And I think now we have people who are so consumed with an emptiness, with a nullity, with a self-loathing even, that it's far easier to find out about something like this, point at it and say, that's wrong, let's suppress it, I am moral. When you are really being the antithesis of that and trying to suppress work that can change lives, it just happens to have some of the mores of its time in the picture.
We're talking with Colin Fleming here on Downtown, and as a teacher, I see this and I hear about it, and in recent years there have been a lot of schools that have said they don't believe they can include the works of Mark Twain in their curriculum anymore because of the language of the 1800s. And then this week I read, as I'm sure you did as well, about school considering whether or not they should include, well, for my money, is the greatest American fiction of the 20th century, Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah, that was depressing to see. But it's like, you know what? People are more mentally unwell and depressed than they've ever been before. And why is that? I think it's because we're also so disconnected from each other, because it is so integral to our existences right now. And I use the word existence because I feel like we exist more than we live. We play a part, we strike a pose, and our entire sense of self becomes a series of poses, such that when someone does have an identity and they sort of codify legitimacy, we tend to run them down. We dislike them. Mm. It's like we dislike experts now because we want our two-bit opinion, the thing that, like, we would have, like, uttered after a few beers in the bar back in younger days, to count just as much as anyone else's voice. And the reality is, sometimes your voice does not count as much as someone who knows a lot more about something than you do. Like, for instance, when I write on the Beatles, I can just say, like, the most benign comment. I can say, as I did once for Rolling Stone, that Help is arguably their worst album. Like, something has to be arguably their worst album. And to get death threats over something like that, and to get endless amounts of hate mail from people who, then you check out their Facebook page, and there they are telling you what a great person they are because they're offended by this, this, and this, and this. Like, well, don't you have any self-awareness? And the point of great art, like Buster Keaton, like To Kill a Mockingbird, is that it holds a mirror up so that you look inward at who you are, maybe what you can better become. And I feel by always looking outward to find things to point at, to hit our objection quota, we never look inward. And art is not produced anymore. And I feel like art only gets to survive in some degree because people don't know about it. The internet, it could have gone like two directions. You don't know a word when you're reading a book. Well, you don't even have to get up, look it up. You can just look it up online. You can see a Mozart opera on YouTube. You can listen to a Bob Dylan bootleg. You can see film noir, but people don't use it for that. They use it to stay outside of themselves and to hunt things. And so when I was going to write this Buster Keaton piece, I almost worried like, Colin, do you want to do this? Do you want to alert people to this film, which might be hunted? And I thought, like, you know, Buster Keaton wouldn't have that attitude himself. He just eventually the art and truth and legitimacy will prevail. But it's very sad to see society in this state where we have to go after these works of art. And I think it just speaks to how profoundly unwell we can be as a society now.
How much of it is that social media culture where first of all, you are what you pronounce yourself to be, but also where even the unqualified can declare themselves experts and get, in some degree, the same level of visibility out there as people who actually know what they're talking about?
I find the notion of, like, for instance, to cobble together my income such as this right now, I have to write on and be an expert on an awful lot of things. It's moving from classical music to film to doing fiction to writing on architecture and art all on the same day. And I've noticed that there is a sea change from how that was viewed. It was viewed as like an oddity, almost like, what's this guy up to, like a few years ago. Now I've realized that it's something you almost become demonized for. And I think we all know, and it's not a lot of people that I think are really good people. It takes a lot of work, I would say, that you have to do heavy lifting to be a moral person who tries to do the right thing. And when you fail to do the right thing, as you inevitably will, to look inside yourself and say, how can I do better next time? And that is a decision of choice that not a lot of people, I think, make. And when you are constantly being clapped on the back by people who enable you, saying, hey, you hit the like button for the right thing, and you in turn do the same thing for your confederates there, you end up with a society where no one is looking inside. And I think we have a totally different standard of being a good person now. It's not actually about that heavy lifting. Oftentimes, it's about not getting caught for doing the things you did that weren't so great.
Yeah, I mean, Collins Carey, is part of it the lack of context, that people don't bother to take the time to understand the context? They focus on, well, it has a word that is bad, therefore it is bad, without looking at the context of the greater piece of work that it's a part of.
I think that's part of it. Like, if you go back to those, like, 1950s sci-fi films, when everyone's been taken over by, like, the body snatchers, and they detect someone who is still human, and, like, they all turn, the masses of, like, the aliens, and they point and they go after it, I think that's kind of an encapsulation of what we have going on now. And you have to take a little bit of time to think, okay, well, you have the general, and this guy, he loves this train, and he was in the Civil War. Well, people who fought on the side of the Confederacy, people are people. Men and women, we want to draw these distinctions between the sexes now and everything. People are people. Like, if you have a bunch of raccoons in your yard, one raccoon might be a little bit smarter than the other raccoons, but by and large, they're raccoons. They're the same species. Same goes with us. And I think that we want to separate people from the herd sometimes, because it makes us feel better in numbers. We get a kind of normalcy in numbers. But at the same time, our relationships are breaking down, and we don't use the internet to think, oh, okay, I'll look this up. You could be a member of the Confederate Army because your brother was a member of it and your dad said to go to war. It doesn't mean that you believe, ha-ha, I shall have lots of slaves. There's a lot more at play there. But people don't use something that I think makes us not well as a society, that being the internet, to get to truths. We use the internet to kind of disseminate our own insecurities faster.
Well, and plus it's a lot easier to compartmentalize and make everything one thing or the other, and in gray areas, subtlety like that is certainly lost in the land of the internet.
I'm all for, like, a Kantian imperative of things are things. They're right, they're wrong. But to get to whether something's right or wrong, I think you find this out as you go along in life. The thing that you think something is, no matter how sure you are in that first moment, there's very small chance that it's that. It's the thing after that, after that, after that, after that, which gets you thinking in a different direction, so you begin to move closer to the truth. And people don't do that now. But if you can call out something like a film from 90 years ago and brand someone who was an artist as a transgressor, which is frankly as creepy in 1984-esque a word there exists, then, you know, who are you hurting? Well, ultimately, who you are hurting is yourself, because you're denying yourself the insight that comes with works of art like this, and you're also robbing yourself of some of your own humanity by refusing to look inward.
Well, it's a terrific piece, a very thought-provoking, Salon.com, the latest from Colin Fleming. And now I want to go actually watch the Keaton Film College. So you got me headed in the right direction and hopefully thinking more outward than inward.
You'll love it. You'll feel all winsome and ready to be affable and just charm people after watching it.
That sounds great. Colin, we look forward to talking a little music with you next week when you're on the show.
Yes, quintessentially English acts, I would say, one being Nick Drake with his folk music pastoralisms, and what I'm going to say, contrary to what a Beatle person might, is the best English singles band ever, that being The Who. They have a huge box set rounding up all of their singles that's just coming out.
We look forward to it next week. Thanks as always, Colin. Have a good week.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
Colin Fleming, you read his work, Salon, Sports Illustrated, Rolling Stone, Slate. He's everywhere, and he's here every Tuesday afternoon on Downtown.